I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Farming News Podcast. Barry Murphy with you here from our news team. I'm joined on the line today by our beef editor Adam Woods, our markets intelligence specialist Phelim O'Neill, and news correspondents Noah Barden and Rachel Donovan. Again, look, another busy week in this week's paper, folks, in a busy Farmers Journal newsroom. Lots in the paper from across the farm sector, including good news for acres applicants, an exclusive story on processors using mega beef finishers to supply cattle, new TB compensation payments, and sheep farmer protests. A lot there to get through over the next 20 minutes or so. Look, Noah, we'll come to you first. Noah Barden, news correspondent. Our page one this week of two stories, but the first of them looks at the good news for acres applicants. Look, this has been the question on many farmers' lips there for the last couple of weeks, and they're wondering when were they going to find out if they were successful. The scheme was originally planned for 30,000 farmers, Noel, but Minister McConlogue has done the business, you could say, and got all 46,000 applicants in. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so a very big announcement that we had there yesterday that all 46,230 applicants, basically anyone that had an application in that was valid, the numbers that will be rejected will be very, very small. It'll just be sort of dud applications where there's serious mistakes or anything like that. Basically, every farmer that applied for the acre scheme will get in. And they are going to get in full. So there had been a lot of talk in recent weeks and months that as it became clear that the scheme had been oversubscribed to the 30,000 places that were originally pledged for 2023, that there might be some sort of a gap payment, or that farmers might get something out of acres, or at least the 16,000 extra farmers, they might get something, but it wouldn't be the full payments. And when we look at the payment rates for the cooperation stream, which is farmers working with other farmers to kind of implement measures across a number of farms, the maximum payment there is €10,500. And if a farmer went in individually through the general route, it's €7,300. So farmers, I suppose, they will be very happy to know that they are in the full scheme, and it won't just be sort of a couple of thousand to roll over a couple of measures maybe that they might have been doing in Glas. And we are seeing as well that there is, as expected, a large number of these farmers are along the Western Seaboard. So
I just bring Adam in on that one, Noel. Look, just you said there's a large injection of cash now from acres into the West and out your way, Adam, up in Cavan. How good is it for the farmers, I suppose, the beef and sheep farmers in particular, up your way?
It's absolutely massive, Barry. I guess if we're looking at 2023 in terms of the reductions on single farm payments and basic payment scheme income on a lot of those farms, this is going to shore up some of those losses. And it's an absolute must. Look, at a lot of those farmers would have been in reps, would have been in Glas, would have been in AUS. So they're used to that environmental payment. So it's absolutely massive. And really, it'll probably maybe maintain a lot of farms there in terms of keeping those farmers farming.
Yeah, very much so. And I think that the big one, I was talking to farmers about this, you know, that when they were waiting to find out, it was this planning thing, you know, looking at maybe hedge grows or what crops they're going to put in and that kind of thing. It was, we need to know because we need to start planning. I suppose, what are the next steps now for those successful applicants? Are they to get a letter in the next few days, Noel, is it, or what's the next phase?
So the confirmation letters, the official letters will be sent out this week. So you'd imagine farmers will have them before the end of the week or early next week. And there will be maps included in these letters setting out which actions they applied to carry out on which areas. So farmers will be able to see where exactly they're going to plant the hedges or what pastures in the low input options or whatever else. And there'll also be a bit of information on the results-based side of things. So there'll be a booklet that'll tell farmers kind of what the advisors will be looking at when they're coming out to take a look at fields, maybe if they're in the results-based grassland or the results-based peatland grassland, to see what plants exactly they're going to be looking for, so they can kind of get a bit of an idea on how they'll score, because those farmers, of course, won't know what they're going to get paid until these assessments are carried out, and they're going to be carried out this year and then in year 3 and 5 of the scheme as well. So that'll be another bit of an indicator for them. But something else, Barry, I suppose, is that this week BIS has opened up the BIS system, but farmers who are in acres, there may be a delay on these being able to access the BIS system. They won't be able to access it until they do have these letters, and they have been asked not to contact their advisors or the department until the letters land and they can get into the system. But as well, to cater for this, BIS has been extended out for an extra 2 weeks to give a little bit more time there.
Yeah, no, it's a welcome move for sure. So for any listener now who's hoping to be successful or feels they will be successful at acres applications, to wait to get that letter. And look, you mentioned there's a body of work ahead for advisors as well, and they're surely going to have to put the shoulder to the wheel now to get all that surveillance done and all that mapping done as well. So look, lots to come on acres, and it'll be an interesting scheme to see how it works in principle and going forward. We'll move on to our second page one story this week as well. And Adam, this one was written by yourself, and it's an exclusive story where you looked at how mega finishers are being used by beef factories to essentially control the kill. They're supplying about a quarter of over 400,000 head of cattle into factories each year through these. I think it's as little as 160 herds. What can you tell us?
Yeah, Barry, we obtain these figures and we analyse them and take broke it down into sort of different categories of animals being slaughtered at different herds over the last 10 years. And really, it's a change in landscape in terms of beef finishing and beef slaughtering in Ireland. And yeah, the headline figure is there, 160 farmers slaughtering 2,500 animals each in 2022, up on 400,000 head, almost a quarter of the national kill. So we've really seen, I suppose, factories since 2019, since beef blockades at factory gates, they've tightened the net and they've went to these sort of bigger finishers and said, we'll issue a contract, we'll issue a forward price. And really that's given these farmers, these 160 farmers, this elite group, the strength to go out and pay big money around marterings. And that's what's been happening over the last 6 months, I guess. And I suppose that's one of the positives. And I suppose one of the negatives or one of the concerns that I'd have, I suppose, tightening an industry into the hands of a very few players, I'd be concerned about that. And in terms of a level playing field around that ring, we 48,000 farmers in this country finished animals in 2022 or slaughtered animals in 2022. Those 160 standing around a ring are in an awful lot better place than the thousands of small finishers or farmers that haven't got a contract. So the factories, I guess, have great foresight here coming out of these herds. They know what's coming. It's good business from their point of view. But whether it's good, I guess, for the image of Ireland Inc. in terms of finishing cattle and going to a few very, very big players in the market, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, no, you've your full reporting and commentary on it there on pages 34 and 35 of this week's paper, Adam. But I may bring Phelim in on this one as well. Do you know, it's the thing you hear farmers talking about, and even see, I think it was the ICMSA were out this week giving out about factories looking to pull price and saying, you know, that they're not going to be fooled by these big feedlots, you know, coming to the ring and either looking to hold back cattle or push on and buying cattle, you know, that they're criticizing them for their manipulation of the market, essentially. Phelim, to what extent does that happen, and how big a role do these 160 herds play?
I wouldn't say, Barry, that it's confined even to farmers talking about it. I've already had a call from a factory man this morning giving me his, shall we say, forthright views on our piece. And firstly, look, let's commend it. This has been a fantastic piece of work. Be Adam here pulling this information together and making this revelation. You know, it is truly unique. And I think Adam has started a very, very good debate here that I think will only help the industry. And yeah, he points out the direction of travel over the last decade, and whether we like it or not, it's probably a reality of life that, you know, we've had more beef being sold through supermarkets than we've had through butcher shops, and we've had witnessed the demise of those. And it's a big loss to a village and to a town and all of that. We get that. But the force of economics is a very powerful one. And this seems to be the way to go. And, you know, it's a debate that's worth having and looking at it from both sides, because the reality is, you know, farmers have enjoyed an exceptional march trade over recent months, driven very much by these feedlot buyers that are equipped there with a superior price. The factory, how it works for the factory is that the one invoice can cover a batch of 100 cattle. It's the same effort to pay for that as it is to pay for one animal coming in. They will be tighter on specifications. They will get the specification they want. They'll get the cattle when they want them. So there is a debate to be had there. Is it as wholesome and as pretty as our family farm picture? Absolutely not. But the reality of life is we've had that picture perfect family farm model with small time producers supplying big factories, selling in international markets. And we haven't seen that command a meaningful premium in the marketplace. So, you know, I don't know that whilst there's a romantic attachment to it, I'm not so sure about the commercial one. And I think farmers, given the low margins it is in beef production and beef finishing, you know, for the smaller farmers, I think we have to look at anything that puts more money into the chain.
Yeah, no, our front page this week could definitely have beef farmers raising their eyebrows. But Adam, I suppose, how much more is going to come from this? Is there another piece of work involved in this kind of you looking into the sector in that way?
Yeah, I guess in terms of we're looking in terms of maybe prices as regards what prices are. We're looking at our ABG tables there and seeing maybe some discrepancies around, you know, higher prices being paid and who are those higher prices being paid to. But just to comment on Phelan's comment, look at it. I think maybe the model would work if smaller farmers brought their animals to the mart and let one of those or two of those or three of those 160 people in terms of buy those animals, because that will probably be the best route for those smaller farmers. I'm just concerned about those 160. If we take four major players in the beef factory market at the moment, they're dealing with 30 or 40 of those big players each. If they pulled out or two factories make a phone call to each of those guys and say, look at lads, we don't want you to buy this week, we want you to pull out of the market, that leaves a big hole in the market for that week in particular. Whereas if we had a lot of farmers maybe buying cattle, it might be a more steadying effect on the trade. So I think in terms of going forward, as I said, if we had a model of smaller farmers selling animals in the mart and bigger farmers buying those, I wouldn't have an issue. The other issue I have is in terms of the margin that's out of each of those moves. If we take a small farmer that's selling an animal in the mart, that next farmer needs to get a margin, and then that next person needs to get a margin as well. So I would question in a beef animal whether we have the required margin for each of those people along the way, or whether we only have margin for one person to sell that animal. But yeah, it's going to create huge debate, and I'm sure we'll have more coverage next week on it.
You know, it'll be interesting to see what the farm organizations say now. But look, sticking with beef, and Phelan, I come back to you. We've covered it off there in the recent days. And again, look, it's one that farm orgs were saying is essential now that Ireland push on to seize the opportunity in China created by Brazilian beef being locked out due to a case of atypical BSE being confirmed in the country. Is it as good as news as we'd hoped it would be?
It's both good and bad news, Barry. China is the world's biggest beef buyer. They buy about a quarter of all the beef that's traded in international markets. Brazil is the biggest exporter, and the same, they would export something between 20 and 25% of all beef that's traded. So when those two aren't working together, then there's a huge gap in supply in China. But on the other side of that coin, there's a huge oversupply in world markets because China's not taking that beef. Now, as you picked up yourself, Barry, in your own investigations last week, a lot of the big Brazilian processors have switched their supply lines instead of Brazilian factories, they've switched to factories that they have in Argentina and Uruguay to fill the gap that's there. But the reality is they still have to find a home for all the beef that they produce in Brazil as well. And after China, their next biggest market now is the United States. And after that, then they're going to be looking at the European Union. So if there's any prolonged absence of China out of the Brazilian market, then that is one of the consequences we're going to see. On the other hand, Ireland has just been reapproved for China back in January this year after being out of it since May 2020. And this really has to leave an open door for our exporters and our factories to walk through when they're wanting to get their product in there. So you can expect to see a surge of it. I would argue that actually we would have been much better with the status quo, because the reality is, and you know, I know we'll talk about the protocol and its successor later on. Brazil is having a problem with protocols this week as well. They have been exporting to China on the back of a protocol that they agreed in 2015, that if they found even a single case of BSE, they would suspend the exports to China. That's what's happened last week, and that's why they're out of that market. Irish farmers won't need reminded, or Irish exporters won't need reminded. We had the same experience in May 2020, and we have been closed out then until January 2023, until they decide to let us back in again. So in terms of that wider supply base, Irish farmers and Irish exporters would be much better served by the status quo, and that market didn't close automatically if a single atypical BSE case turned up, as it is liable to every year or two. You know, that's just a fact of life. Because the Chinese market, you know, it has grown year on year since 2012. It is going, it's forecast by USDA to grow again this year. So the reality is that it's a market that there's opportunity for Irish beef in without Brazil being excluded. Brazil being excluded might mean there's more people from China looking to buy Irish beef, but we, on the other side of that coin, is there'll be more Brazilian beef for sale in markets around Europe and around other, around the rest of the world than there would have been otherwise. Well, so it's very much a mixed blessing, Barry, to put it into a final soundbite word.
Yeah, no, it's a mixed one, all right. And Adam, I know, like, it's one that farmers or kind of farm organizations, again, I was saying, you know, they've been using it in the last few days. They're saying that this good news, or what they were terming as the opportunity in China now, is more kind of the reason why prices shouldn't be pulled this week, and kind of or saying that, you know, farmers should sell hard and, you know, make sure that they don't have factories pull price. Where is it at the moment in terms of beef prices? So, has it had any impact?
So I spoke to Joe Buck this week about the market and about where it's at, and that he would, you know, it's quite a tempered market at the moment as regards that Chinese market for beef, and has been maybe for the last couple of weeks. A specific number of cuts going in there, so it's not as if we're selling, we'll say, whole animals out there. It's a specific number of cuts from a specific number of animals. Remember, the number of animals that we can actually send to China, those feedlot animals that we just talked about 10 minutes ago, they're not eligible for that, because a lot of those are TB restricted units. So you have a specific number of animals, and then you have a specific number of cuts, so it's taken a while maybe to build up a container load or whatever of that cuts to go there. And he also said that he would reckon that Brazil won't be that long out of China. I don't know what Phelan's thoughts on that, but he would say that he reckons it's going to be a short term ban, and Brazil will be back into China before too long.
I think there's validity in that point. All right, Adam. Just one other term and condition, if you like, to supply in China. I think they've a 30-month age limit as well, you know, so not all cattle are eligible for it. When Brazil was suspended in September 2021, it was the middle of December before they got readmitted again. So they were out of the market for 3 months that time. Now, these things, politics are always involved. And there's one of the first foreign trips being made by the new Brazilian president, President Lula, is to China, scheduled for the last week of March. And I know there's huge efforts being made behind the scenes at officials level to try and have this problem resolved before then. So, you know, it is quite possible that it could be a relatively short-term interruption, and that will be certainly what the political diplomats will be looking to achieve. Now, whether that happens or not remains to be seen.
Good stuff. Right, look, we'll move on to news correspondent Rachel Donovan next, folks. And Rachel, you were again at Leinster House this week. You were with the IFA at a sheep protest last week. And this week you're in with the Irish Cattle and Sheep Farmers Association, headed by President Dermot Kelleher. They were in at the Dáil protesting about sheep prices and a lack of government support. How did you get on?
Yeah, so back in again this week, Barry, for another protest. As you said, this week it was the ICSA, or the Irish Cattle and Sheep Farmers Association. I suppose they were highlighting the stress and the pressure sheep farmers are under at the minute with regards, I suppose, an income crisis, and they seem to be losing money by the day. And I suppose that was what a lot of farmers who I spoke to told me outside the Dáil on Tuesday. I suppose, first of all, the big asks from ICSA is an emergency support package of 50 million for sheep farmers. And they're hoping that this will be funded from the Brexit Adjustment Reserve Fund. A lot of people are saying that the issues within the sheep sector at the moment with regards to low prices and poor market prices overall is as a result of Brexit. And they're hoping that they can get some sort of a lift from the fund, and that there is money left in it, so why it shouldn't go unspent, and that they're the only sector that hasn't used any money from the fund so far. So I suppose, speaking to a couple of farmers, Barry, it's quite obvious that they are under a lot of pressure. One farmer told me he's farming for over 50 years and he has never seen inputs so high and land price so low. You know, he's over 1,000 joes. He would have kept over 3,000 joes in his day, but he said he has never seen it to be as bad. And he says very hard. He's doing all the work on his own. He said it's very hard to take that. It's emotionally and physically draining to be losing money.
Yeah, there's definitely something not adding up there with the squeeze from input costs being high, and they're just not getting the prices then in factories. I was myself there in Tullamore yesterday, and sheep prices were way down, and it was organic sheep, but at the same time you could see the kind of the effect of conventional prices being down as well. I suppose, Rachel, this comes after a number of farm organizations calling for support. I saw the INHFA are out looking for a €35 from the minister this week as well. Minister McConnell, and I know we spoke about there at the top of the podcast on this, the good news for acres applicants that all 46,000 farmers have to get in. He's kind of saying, though, that this will act as a bit of a package for sheep farmers, because it'll be majority small, extensive sheep and beef farmers who went for acres.
Yeah, I don't think sheep farmers will be happy enough with that. So they're looking for €30 for the sheep improvement scheme, the new sheep welfare scheme, up from €12. €12 was a new price they got this year. It was up €2 from the last cap, but they're saying it's an insult. It's not covering their costs. They're also looking for €5 for the proper presentation of wool. So I don't think, Barry, that these particular farmers that I was speaking to will be happy. And I suppose, as well as that, Sean McNamara, the ICSA sheep chair, very vocal on this. He's a sheep farmer himself. I think he will definitely be looking for this €50 million package.
Yeah, it seems they're going to drive on looking for it anyway. And look, you have more on that in this week's paper, the full spread on that sheep farmer protest at the Dáil on Tuesday. And also, for anyone interested in where sheep prices are at the moment, our sheep editor, Darren Carty, has a full price roundup in this week's Mart and Factory pages at the back of the paper. So thanks, Rachel. Look, we'll see where that one goes. And moving back to yourself there, Phelim, another look, big one on a national story this week was the Brexit news in terms of the Northern Ireland Protocol and the deal up there. Look, it's one I'll put my hands up and say I'm actually not all that up to speed on it, Phelim. So I was looking forward to you telling me about it on the podcast this morning. So for farmers, what do they need to know in terms of the trade of agricultural goods?
That it will be business as usual. There will be no changes. There'll be no interruptions. There's no real direct impact on this protocol replacement, the Windsor framework, as it's referred to. There's no direct impact for farmers south of the border that we haven't experienced already. It is a bigger issue in Northern Ireland, and our Northern Ireland edition of the paper has went major on it this week, David Wright. And look, it does solve most of the practical problems that had been a feature of the deal. The reality was that goods going from Britain into Northern Ireland ports at Larne and Belfast were subject to the same controls, exact same controls, as goods going from Britain into Dublin or Russell airports. And the reality of that was that, you know, you had supermarkets there, the Asda and the Sainsbury supermarket chain, that would be the number 2 and 3 supermarkets in the UK. They're not the Republic of Ireland, of course, but they're serviced from distribution depots in Scotland and north of England. And, you know, it simply wasn't feasible to try and have full-scale border controls, SPS border controls, that's veterinary certification and customs checks on those. And that has been dealt with. Now, there is still the other one that was controversial and has been an issue south of the border as well, the access for seed potatoes from Britain. That has been sorted out. Northern farmers will have access to seed potatoes from Britain, whereas Republic of Ireland farmers won't have. You know, that is the reality of Brexit. And aside from that, then, the trade, cross-border trade, will continue completely seamless. And many of the gripes that were there, legitimate gripes, I would add, about the protocol in terms of disruption of trade between Britain in Northern Ireland, many of those have been solved. A couple of ones that are worth noting that aren't solved, again, from a Northern point of view, you know, there would be a significant number of Northern farmers would import pedigree rams from Scotland, for example, that they would take cattle from the North, particularly bulls, over to sales in Perth, etc. They would also attend shows in Scotland. And those, there's a very cumbersome process, you know, and a standstill period required for any cattle that are participating in that. And that means it's simply not practical for a Northern pedigree breeder to show an animal in Scotland at a pedigree sale and then bring it home again the next day. That's not doable. So therefore, it simply means that that option's restricted to them. Now, that hasn't been dealt with, but many things have. And look, the protocol resolution, the Windsor framework, it is a much better option. It gives a workable Brexit, we'll call it. Nothing beats what we had before, as our Northern editor would keep reminding us, the single market and the customs union. But it's better than where we had been. And above all, and this is where the Southern interest comes into it big time, Barry, if the trade and cooperation agreement collapsed because of all of this, and it was, or even we just got into a series of penalties and recriminations, and those things happen even between friendly countries like the EU and the US got into a massive trade spat over the Boeing Airbus aircraft dispute and subsidies there, and that led to huge tariffs in that area. Now, if the UK and the EU ever got into that space, one of the natural areas for the UK to target would be agri exports on the island from the Republic of Ireland. And you're looking there, if that went as bad as it could go, you're looking at a potential 1 billion of tariffs. The agreement that was put in place last week, I'll not say it removes it completely, but it seriously reduces a risk of that ever happening. So I think that is the bit and on the take-home message, if you like, why last week's deal was a good deal for farmers across the island of Ireland.
Yeah, no, I see. I have it reported there on page 23 in the paper, Phelim. It's you described, look, as a big step, and that it surely is. Anyway, look, and I'm sure there'll be kind of a follow-on story from it in the weeks and months ahead as well. So another one we'll keep an eye on.
I'll be doing a follow-up online piece for it just at the weekend to plug the online stuff when we're here on the podcast as well, Barry.
Brilliant. I'm sure it'll be essential reading. Look, spot on, Phelim. Thanks for joining the podcast. Look, that's all we have time for this week, folks. Plenty more in this week's paper, though. We have news of new TB compensation payment rates for farmers and how it might be paid. We also look at the latest TB eradication science, some interesting stories there in the paper. And we also then have a bit more across the paper, I suppose, from the other farm sectors, including, as always, our back page is looking at the latest beef and sheep prices. But look, that's all we have time for this week. There's more on those and all the stories discussed by the team today in this week's paper, available in shops across the country now. Thanks for listening and for joining. Safe farming, and talk to you the next time.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.